Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Comté Cheese Association. Comté, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at comté-usa.com. That's comté-usa.com.
This episode is supported by Angry Orchard. HRN is teaming up with them to host a virtual event all about American cider. Check it out at heritageradionetwork.org/cider.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cutting the Curd. I'm your guest host, Carlos Escas. I'm so excited for today's show. Today, we will talk about the work of a new organization in cheese, the Cheese Culture Coalition. Today, I have three of the people involved in the organization. There's other people, but these three people are involved as part of the board of directors. They are Whitney Roberts, Ajayla Abdullah, and Kira James. Welcome to the show, everyone.
Thank you for having us.
It's awesome to be here.
For everyone listening, today's show is being recorded from many places. I am myself in Mexico. Where are everyone today recording from?
I, Whitney, am in Virginia. I'm in Williamsburg, Virginia right now.
Hi, this is Ajayla. I'm in Chicago.
This is awesome. And of course, Cutting the Curd and the Heritage Radio Network is based in New York City. And so we have a truly U.S. and even North America show today. With that, I want to start with the questions. As people know, this is very laid back. We are all friends here, and we just want to learn from what you are doing. I'm going to start with Whitney with some questions that we have talked about, just for, you know, making things easier for everyone. So, Whitney, could you tell our listeners about you, what you've been doing, kind of your work before you started this important work with the organization?
So my name is Whitney. I am the president and the founder of the Cheese Culture Coalition. We'll probably end up referring to it a lot of times as CCC throughout this discussion, just a heads up. I started my cheese career probably about 8 years ago, I feel like. I started out as a monger at Whole Foods, and then I ended up, like all of us do, I just became obsessed with cheese, and I wanted to learn everything I could about it, so I ended up taking my CCP, and then I started working at a dairy and making cheese called Pure Luck Dairy in Central Texas. It's in Dripping Springs, Texas, in the Hill Country there. And simultaneously, I was also teaching classes at a place called Antonelli's. That's a cheese shop there in Austin. I still currently teach classes with them, even though I'm in Virginia. Just, you know, they pivoted, obviously, because of the pandemic and whatnot. So teaching classes with them, a lot of stuff kind of overlapped. I had a couple kids in between, but that's kind of my career in a nutshell so far.
That's wonderful. And I apologize. I called the organization the Culture Cheese Coalition, and it is actually Cheese Culture Coalition.
Yes.
All righty. Well, that sounds like a full plate, and it's so fun that you're still teaching for the Antonelli's. And I actually didn't know about the cheese making. And in the newsletter that just went out, we actually have a cheese from the Pure Luck. So that is, you know, like everything in cheese is very small. We know all of each other.
Yes.
So, so tell us about the organization. What sort of motivated you? What is What is the organization about?
So I started the organization about a year ago now at this point. We are a nonprofit with the goal of increasing equity and inclusion and diversity within the cheese industry. We're doing that through education of the BIPOC community. We have two programs. We've got the Cheese Education Grant that is awarded to BIPOC individuals that want to start or advance or continue their careers in cheese. It's an open-ended grant that we hope to be starting this year. And then we also have the Cheese Education Program that we've already started, and that is where we bring cheese education directly to schools with some of our instructors go to the schools. We can teach kids a Cheese 101 class. We can teach just basically directed towards whatever the kids are learning if we do it through like a school situation. So if it's a biology class, they'd be learning about pasteurization. We can teach them about cheese and literature if it's a literature class. We just want to make sure that we're making cheese accessible to those BIPOC students that we are teaching. I started the organization because basically my entire career, I've almost exclusively been the only BIPOC individual behind the counter at all the places that I have worked, specifically like the only Black woman behind the counter or in any cheese situation. that's something that I always noticed. I always felt that. And in any kind of cheese situation that we are in, there's always been a lack of diversity. The industry as it is, I know that I had to do something that was going to make cheese accessible to people and to get it to marginalized communities. So I started the CCC.
That sounds wonderful. So could you, for people that don't know, because they live under a rock, sorry, but what do you mean by BIPOC?
BIPOC is Black, Indigenous, or a Person of Color is what it stands for.
All right. Thank you. And so I, of course, you and I have talked about this. I have tried to attend to some of the meetings that you have had online. And, you know, I have followed and also read your vision online, which is kind of interesting that, you know, is one of these visions a la sort of Sing Train, the DCTA, which I had a show last time about, you know, and this idea of visioning for the future. And I think these are very interesting that have become part of kind of this conversation in cheese. So you definitely paint sort of like wonderful picture, very personal picture of what you want for the future. But, you know, as we know, plans change. So what do you think is the one thing that you want to achieve in the next 5 years that you can share with people?
Well, we have, you know, our goals, like you were saying, we have our goals of how many kids we want to be teaching. We have our goals of how many grants we want to give out. And all of that is the same as my vision. 1,505 people is what we'll be able to share cheese with. Individuals will be able to share cheese with. I really think that what we want to achieve in the next 5 years is, I think, and I know that we can do this, is change the cheese industry. I know that all of us on the board, we are BIPOC individuals in this industry. We're all telling our stories. We're all speaking to our experiences. And I think that that in order for us to really be able to make an impact and really be able to share the love of cheese and the passion of cheese that we have with these kids, we're going to have to make sure that the industry is a place that's welcoming for them when they come into it as well. And welcoming and accepting of them when they're ready to start their careers in cheese. So I would say the one thing that we're going to be doing and the one thing that I hope to do, it sounds kind of like a general thing and kind of like an obvious thing, but I think it's just to change the cheese industry and change the lack of diversity within it. So
cool. And so, you know, you say change the cheese industry, you know, for people that are like-minded, you know, we all, me as a Latino, of course, I want that change. We many of us know that it needs to change, and the change is not only important for sort of the obvious non-representation that we have, but you know, to actually be more welcoming and open for other people. But do you think the industry is ready for it?
I am going to say yes and no to this question. I think that the answer for me comes a lot from just my experience as a person of color in the industry, and also from running this organization, running the Cheese Culture Coalition. There's been a ton of organizations and individuals that have supported us in a genuine way. They've, you know, helped us along in building this organization, and they truly want to make cheese more diverse, and that's obvious. But we also have a lot of people that that don't know how to support diversity in the industry, and in that fact, they end up doing a lot of things in like a self-serving way. They basically are trying to ask us to help them try to figure this part out, and asking us for things that aren't really what our organization does, like coming to us and asking us for help. And then when we give them ways that they can truly help, we don't ever hear back from them. So to me, this reads as like a stagnant situation. I think a lot of people might not be willing to do the tough work to make the industry diverse. But I also think that for it to be truly diverse, people are going to have to look within their organizations and say, are we really doing what we need to do to increase diversity, equity, and inclusion within the cheese industry? And then I think that the cheese industry will actually be ready once that happens.
Right. And so, you know, we, of course, kind of just, I just thought about this, is like we're talking about the industry as what we understand as the industry. But, you know, we know that people that are listening to Cutting the Curd, are some of them are cheesemakers, and they're listening right now while they're doing the dishes, you know, cleaning the plant and all that. And this is the moment that they listen to the show. But there's also people that are in the counter, and they, you know, hear the show maybe when they're closing the store and, you know, cleaning the store or you know, distribution center or whatever it is. And then there's people, you know, that take care of animals, and they maybe are listening to this podcast, you know, while they're tending to the animals. So the industry is actually quite large and quite diverse in the sort of task that people have. And do you think there is one part of the industry that is actually more, you know, what you say is sort of like cognizant of the need to change, ready to do it, but don't need to know to do it? And then there's other parts of industry that maybe are quite successful at creating, you know, diversity and inclusion. It's just that we don't see those parts of the industry.
I will kind of let Ajayla answer this question whenever she, because I know that part of her answer is going to probably answer this. I feel like that what's happened so far has been a lot of just like smaller parts of it, not that have been more supportive as far as our organization goes. I think that, I think that a lot of people that have really loud voices haven't been as supportive. I hope that kind of answers the question.
Sure.
That's been our experience so far, at least.
Yeah. No, I understand. I think I'm going to send to a break right now. We are going to come back and talk to Jayla and Kira as well. But we are going to take a brief break to hear from our sponsors.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Conte Cheese Association. Conte Cheese Association represents the Conte PDO, Conte Protected Designation of Origin in the USA. Conte is a raw milk cooked pressed cheese from the Jura Mountains of France. There, every day, 2,500 family farms deliver milk to over 150 local cheesemaking facilities, or fruitiers. this milk must be transformed into conté within 24 hours of milking to preserve the lactic microflora in the milk, ensuring the cheese's aromatic potential. About 105 gallons of milk are required to craft a single wheel of conté. Conté takes time to acquire its flavors in the affinage cellars. After 8 months of aging by dedicated affineur on average, each wheel of conté is graded and shipped to market. No wheel of conté is the same. Its flavors speak to the pastures where the cows grazed, the season in which it was made, the particular craftsmanship of the cheesemaker, and the time spent in the aging cellar. Therefore, every wheel of conté is unique. Learn more about conté, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at conté-usa.com. That's conté-usa.com.
Okay, welcome everyone. I'm Carlos Yescas, your guest host for Cutting the Curd today. And I'm talking today with Whitney Roberts, Ajayla Abdullah, and Kira James. We've been talking about the work of their newish organization. I would say still a new organization. And we heard before from Whitney, who is serving as the president of the board. And now we're going to hear from Ajayla. Hello. How are you?
Hi. Thank you so much for having us on. This is so great. I love Cutting the Curd.
This is great. Ajayla, could we start with a brief introduction? I know you, but I don't know that other people would know you. And I think it'll be great to hear from you about sort of your career in cheese, your other advocacy work, anything you want to tell us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us on. And this is such a treat to be able to talk to the to the Cutting the Curd audience. So my name is Ajayla, and my career in cheese officially started in 2008, working for Pastoral Artisan Cheese Bread and Wine here in Chicago. Before that, I was a cook and had started getting into artisan cheese. I was always working for restaurants that were either local focused or were doing, you know, getting cheese directly from the cheesemaker. And since starting at Pastoral, I've been, I was a monger, I've been a manager, I've been a cheese buyer, and I'm currently the director of marketing for a cheese manufacturer in the suburbs of Chicago. I don't want to say I do any advocacy work. What I do, I am a helper. I try to help where I can. And here in Chicago, for me, that means helping with some mutual aid, offering donations to protest organizations and to a couple of other organizations that focus on marginalized people. So there's the Chicago Freedom School, which has a focus on Black and Brown youth. There is Good Kids Mad City, which is kind of what it sounds like. These are Black, primarily Black and Brown youth working to affect change in Chicago. And there is also the Black Space Alliance, which is the only BIPOC-led organization. It's here on the south side of Chicago, and they focus on LGBTQIA plus needs. And they also, while focusing on those communities, they also give back to their own community with food donations and clothing. So I try to help where I can, and to raise awareness about those organizations as well.
Thanks for that work. I know it's important that you do it, and I would say that is advocacy, but we can disagree on that. Inclusion and equity in the cheese industry have been in your mind for a long time. we talked about it before the pandemic. I would say that you may be the most experienced one in the show, not only working on these issues, but maybe even the more senior monger among us. But what do you think is different now that we can have these conversations? Conversations, obviously, about inclusion and equity.
Yeah. You know, if I'm going to be honest, the difference is that on May 25th, 2020, the entire world watched George Floyd, his murder. And the world could not ignore it at that point. And they couldn't ignore the state-sanctioned violence against people of color, and especially Black people. One of the things that happened, there were so many things that went on, but one of the things that happened is people were shocked, even though this was something that had happened before previously. There have been a history of police brutality against peoples of color. People were very shocked. It was, for those who watched the video, it was a turning point. I did not watch the video. And the difference is this didn't happen in an isolated moment. And people, having watched that, felt compelled to do something. And the world felt compelled to say something. And we, as marginalized people, and especially as Black people in this country, had not received that support. Not in my lifetime, you know, perhaps in my mother's during the civil rights movement, but not in my lifetime have we received that kind of support. And it became the first time really in my industry experience that I and other people of color and black people in the industry were being offered a space to be heard. So there were a lot of people. I don't want to make it sound like this was something brand new to the industry. There were a lot of people in the industry who have been working towards a more inclusive industry for years and have been supportive of different causes for years. But this is the first time that I felt, as a Black woman, acknowledged in the industry and listened to.
Yeah, I am. When I was coming up with this question, I kept going back to that moment, and I think that, you know, for a long time during the beginning of the pandemic, a big part of the conversation of frontline workers was about how COVID was affecting disproportionately Black and brown people, and then seeing someone get murdered was so shocking. Like you, I didn't see the video. I didn't need to see the video to know what type of violence is possible against Black men. And I agree. This kind of builds into the same question that I had asked Whitney before. We know the industry, it needs to diversify, but do you think the industry is ready for it?
No, I don't think, you know, when I say no, I want people who are listening to understand. I don't mean necessarily you specifically, you know, my friend Jane Doe. I don't mean you. What I mean is the industry as a whole. Excuse me. So earlier you were talking about how large the industry is. You know, you've got everyone from, you know, the people who are doing the animal husbandry to the people who are, you know, you've got distributors, you've got mongers, you've got, you know, makers, you've got, you know, the business people who are making decisions but aren't, you know, by the VAT anymore. The industry as a whole is not ready. I think in my experience, if I'm going to make paint with broad strokes here, I will say that the industry for me breaks down into three camps. You have a group of people who want to believe that they want change. These are people who end up doing a lot of virtue signaling, and performative actions. You have another group of people who want to affect change and don't know where to start. And then you have people who don't see any reason to change. And in each of these groups, you can break it down even a little bit more. So in group number one, you have people who posted a black square on their Instagram. They retweeted a post. And they feel like, okay, we had our protests and everything, and now we're done. And they want to stop the conversation. They feel like, you know, maybe it's taking up too much time, or, you know, it's a hard thing to deal with, and they don't want to have to put themselves through that any longer. In the second group of people, you also have a group of people who truly want to help and truly mean it. But you also have a group of people who want to help, but also want marginalized people to take on those unpaid labors of guiding them to the right thing. I'm kind of echoing a bit what Whitney said. These folks are looking to us on how can we change the system that we didn't have a hand in building. And then they get upset when people, marginalized people say, no, I'm not going to do this labor for you. I'm not going to, you know, it's an emotional labor. It's a physical labor. It's a mental labor. And asking us to do this for you to fix a system that you created and that we are just trying to get our foot in is really unfair. And it's hurtful. And then you have another group of people who say that we need to rebuild the industry, that, you know, because of COVID, I mean, we all know dozens of cheesemakers, of mongers, of retail shops, people who need help, who have been hurt by COVID in ways we never anticipated. And the people in the third group are very keen on building the industry. And they say things like, well, once we get things back to where they were, then we can look at DEI. And they adding diversity to the build is seen as being as taking away from the industry. Instead of seeing that when we add diversity, when we add equity and inclusion, it's going to make a more powerful industry. We're going to be stronger. And, you know, having this diversity is what's going to keep our industry alive and thriving. And again, these are, I'm painting with broad strokes. But if we look at the industry as a whole, the entire thing, from grass to conference, the answer for me is no.
Thank you. And of course, you know, if you're a listener and still here, this is part of the hard work to hear kind of these answers, because we are being here completely honest. And as Ayala said, this is emotional labor that we have to do, that, you know, in my other shows, I have not asked the white people to tell me a response to diversity and equity. It is very specific what we're trying to do here. And so I thank you, Jayla, for that. I had one last question that we kind of talked about a little bit before. And you sort of referenced the other work that you do in Chicago and all the other, again, advocacy, I would say, that you do there. How is the work that you are joining in with the organization to do different from that? Or what have you brought from sort of that work, that helping, as you call it, all other organizations to this one?
Okay. First, I need to make a correction. I think I said Black Space Alliance, and I'm like, why did I say that? It's Brave Space Alliance. So I want to clarify that.
Thank you.
So in June of 2020, I did an Instagram live talk with the then executive director of ACS, Karen. And I found out afterwards that someone in the comments had asked if I had a Venmo. And one of my friends gave them my name, and a couple of people donated, which I thought, oh, okay. And I turned around and turned those donations into mostly groceries for people who were out of work and struggling. And it kind of, that to me was an aha moment, if you will, where I realized that for whatever reason, I had wedged my foot in the door. And there was a little bit of a crack, and that if I kept going, I could help open that door wider. And so when Whitney announced the Cheese Culture Coalition, I waited a bit, and then I just sent her an email and said, you know, do you need help? And she was just like, yeah, I can use your help. And I you know, I'd never done work for a nonprofit before. But the work to me it's very similar. So when I donate, or when I try to bring attention and awareness to the social groups here in Chicago that I support and that I believe in, I'm doing it, I don't want people to forget. I want to keep that awareness in front of them. I want them to keep listening. And at this moment, people are currently listening to us. So I feel it's a combination of a responsibility and a privilege to be able to do that. And with the CCC, it is the same. It is a responsibility for me to try to uplift and empower marginalized voices, and starting with those younger voices who, you know, if we don't get them into the industry, what does the industry look like 10 years from now, 15 years from now? So doing this work with the CCC, it's more specific to what I do in my career, obviously, but it feels very much... it feels very similar. My goal is to uplift, to empower, and to help affect change. So, you know, one of the things I appreciate about working with this organization, about working with these women that I work with, is this is an organization, you know, by us, for us. So this is an organization started by a woman of color, and there are women of color on the board, and we all have different experiences and backgrounds, but we all have the same goal. And that doing that kind of labor feels really good. So it's a little bit selfish also, I guess. You know, I get a good feeling from doing this kind of labor with people who I know are in it, like really wholeheartedly just in it. So yeah, I hope that answered the question, that I didn't get too like squirrely on it.
No, that was wonderful. And I thank you for it. I it is actually very uplifting to hear that. Cause I think sometimes, when we're talking about these topics, it's like, you know, I need to do, you know, I do this work for, you know, the many hundred reasons that there's a problem in the world. But what I hear from you is this actually is quite uplifting to me, and I enjoy it. And I think that's the best message to leave this here. We are trying to uplift, you know, other people and try to do this in a positive way. Thank you, Ajayda. We're moving on to Kira. Kira and I know each other from Boston, but I'm gonna let herself introduce herself and tell us how she studied in cheese, her career in food, and if she wants to tell us what she's up to now.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much, Carlos. Nice to be here with the gang and on Cutting the Curd. Yeah, so I've been in the cheese industry for almost a decade, coming into it as a second career, getting my master's degree in the process. So when I was getting my master's degree, I started at Formaggio Kitchen part-time. And so the rest is history from there. Regardless of what my main professional focuses are, cheese has always been in my life ever since. Currently, I teach remotely for Antonelli's, and I also do some brand marketing work for various food and dairy businesses. And I am currently working on creating my own cheese-centric business of my own, so stay tuned on that. But yeah, I'm really excited to talk more about the Cheese Culture Coalition.
That's wonderful. We're excited to hear, and whenever you're ready to tell us, let us know, and we'll have you again on the show for that. So you, as you said, you have been working in cheese for quite some time, but you, in my mind, you have always had this sort of concentration in sort of the education. You have worked in adult education, cooking and health education. As you said, you are also teaching some classes with Antonelli's in Texas. Your own studies in gastronomy. How do you think your skills in that sort of education work had been brought to the work that you're doing in the organization?
Well, I think much like Jayla mentioned and Whitney, you know, we all have these unique experiences. So for me, my unique path has sort of given me a focus of education in a lot of ways, and specifically in diversity in education, having worked with counterculture on working around the country, educating cheesemongers, cheesemakers, caterers, chefs of all walks of life, sort of gives me a really holistic way of communicating about cheese. And so I think that allows for me to take this sort of mission that no one's really tried to do before and put some context and voice behind it, taking what we're learning from the different communities we're talking to, what I'm learning from Jayla and Whitney, you know, having those different experiences. But for me, the education, and just for me as a, you know, morally and my personal growth, education and learning about myself has been a really important part of that process. So sort of taking that unique experience of meeting mongers of all walks of life and then bringing them together in this organization. You know, we're looking for volunteers. And in an organization, you know, seeking diversity, the volunteers don't necessarily look like those whom we're going to be teaching. So bringing together these different voices, I do think I have some unique experiences that can lend to that. And with the work of my fellow board members and those answering our volunteer survey and, you know, reaching out to us via our questionnaire, we're definitely getting some really nice content, and we're going to create something that hasn't been done before. So I'm super excited about it to use what I already have.
This episode is supported by Angry Orchard. I'm Jimmy Carboni, host of Beer Sessions Radio, and I'll be moderating an amazing virtual event with Angry Orchard and Heritage Radio Network on May 26th. We'll be celebrating the release of the new first-of-its-kind book, American Cider, A Modern Guide to a Historic Beverage. I'll be in conversations with the authors, Daniel Pucci and Craig Cavallo. Then we'll welcome Angry Orchard head cider maker Ryan Burke for myth busting about this beverage and an interactive cider tasting. When you order a ticket, you'll also receive a copy of the book. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/cider. Plus, you'll find a link to purchase a hand-selected cider bundle from Angry Orchard so you can taste along with us. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/cider.
Okay, listeners, you probably won't know anything happened, but something happened. But we are back, and we're going to pick up where we left with Kira. And we were talking about sort of her previous work in education and what she has brought to the industry, because we're not sure where that actually ended recording. We are going to move to the next question, if that's okay. And of course, you know, send us your questions if you have any questions about what Kira was saying, and we will get them back to you. So I want to ask you also the same question that I asked Whitney and Ajayla about the industry needing to diversify, but if the industry is actually ready for it.
So this is definitely a tough question, you know, yes or no, or yes, but yes, and are easy to do. But I think what I kind of set it on is sort of the if not now, when mantra. So I feel like Whitney started this amazing organization. Ajayla and I and many other people have joined on to support this amazing cause. And so I feel like as much as it's difficult work, you know, we're starting to have those tough conversations. And, you know, it's really just going to be important for other people to do the same thing through education being a really sort of easy way in. You know, people love cheese. We want to educate our youth. So that seems to be a pretty nice way. And I think it's working out really well. I think in terms of understanding those who may not be BIPOC, you know, their place in how to do that or, you know, what diversity means, I don't think it's really known yet. You know, even since we've started this this organization, we've changed, you know, our approach to talking to educators and students and figuring out the best way to approach it. So, you know, it's an evolving yes, but I definitely feel like the industry is ready because, you know, if nothing else, the four of us are. So, yeah.
Wow. That is actually the perfect segue to the next question, which is, as you have all heard, listeners, we are all cheesemongers. We're starting as cheesemongers. And maybe we're not cheesemongers today anymore in the sense of the labor of working on the floor, which is very different and it's a different type of work. So the question for you, Kira, is one could argue that the counters are quite diverse in some parts of the United States, as many other low-paying entry-level jobs. But then there seems to be kind of a barrier to people to move to other parts of the industry. Of course, is not the example here. You have all, the three of you have moved to very different, but this is not the reality to most people. And so what you think is that sort of preventing that move?
I mean, I think a lot of it comes from the place every entry-level job, you know, that ceiling, you know, that financial ceiling where, you know, there's not money being offered to people. And so they're kind of, you know, forced to make tough decisions. You know, as you get older, you need more things, you know, those things cost money. I also feel like apart from that, there's a glamour to the counter. There's a lot of glitz to having that role. At least from my experience, I'm not speaking for everyone. But there's not really a lot of that beyond the counter. You know, a lot of the work gets a lot harder beyond that point, right? And that's where we haven't really gotten that diversity passed because a lot of the work again starts inside the companies with their understanding of how to make everyone feel accepted. But definitely, I mean, BIPOC people are eating cheese. They're talking about cheese. You know, I know my communities, being mostly people of color, always want to know more about cheese. Always, you know, I have to bring cheese to events and things. So it's just a matter of getting the information to them and making them feel as though it's meant for them, right? So I think a lot of that is kind of what our work is. And I feel like once that's done, the people's passion won't stop at a monetary number. People's passions won't stop at a certain role in an industry. You know, they'll create their own. People just need to see it happening around them before they can, you know, before they know to do it. So that's sort of, I feel like where cheese is at right now.
Right. And I think that's very common in other industries as well. Wine, exactly. For example, beer is probably one of that is doing the best. If you consider that there's actual movement within the Black and Brown communities in that industry,
For sure.
I guess the second part of that question is, what are other parts of the industry that, you know, there may be some diversity at the, and maybe not inclusion, but, you know, definitely diversity at the ground level, but then it sort of gets lost.
I think I'd love for maybe Ajayla or someone else to chime in. I feel like I haven't really been in the industry in that way for quite some time, so it's tough for me to speak without making too many assumptions. But I do feel like, you know, just the front offices, the top offices, ownership, you know, those types of things. But again, it starts at a place where people need to get the finances to then start it. You mentioned wine and beer, those two industries, you know, definitely being increased in their financial support from venture capitalists and things like that to get the money into those industries. So definitely, I think it's just a matter of time until people start looking at cheese the same way. But yeah, I don't know if Ajayla or Whitney have anything to add to that one.
Please chime in.
So I think, you know, I agree with what Kira said. I think a lot of the glamour is with the counter, as far as if you're not a cheesemaker. I think where I'd like to see more diversity and where I think we are positioned to see more diversity is not just in sales and marketing, but distributors. Like who is the person who's actually taking that cheese from the farm to the end user? You know, who is that person? What does that person look like? I think it's very easy to, because Black and brown bodies have been underpaid and undervalued for so long, it's very easy for us to end up behind the counter and not see other opportunities. And I think when you see more people who are doing that work, you know, when you see people at the distribution level, when you see people at the sales and marketing, when you see people doing, you know, the tech work that you need to do, like website design and things like that, when you see all of these spots and you start seeing more colorful people, you know, people of color doing these things, I think that's a big help. And we can't do that without the support of our bosses or the industry as a whole.
Just sort of mentioning, you know, then the people who get those jobs, and I was thinking sales specifically as a area that could be supported by a more diverse industry. And I feel like, you know, they then go home to their communities and talk about their job. They'd go home with the samples they get from their jobs. You know, they'd go home with those relationships. They travel the world to meet the farmers, you know, that they're showcasing. So there's a lot of culture, nurturing in terms of intelligence that can be done as well. So I just wanted to add that in there.
Okay, everyone. We still have some issues here. We wanted to continue this conversation, but technology gods were not happy with us. But that's okay. We're going to have the Whitney, Ajayla, and Kira again to have a more open conversation, because what I don't want to leave everyone here is feeling that this is a stifled conversation. The reality is that we're trying to do this in a pandemic life, everyone from their houses, and it's not as easy. But having said that, I thank everyone for having stayed with us and listening. And please send us your questions. I know that we can get enriched by your questions, and we can try to figure out ways to make our industry more accessible and equitable. Anything else that you guys want to share? A goodbye before I cut it out.
I just want to say thank you so much for having us on Cutting the Curd. Was so excited whenever you asked us to be on here and speak about CCC and just share our views on equity inclusion in the industry. And thank you for letting us share our views and speak our truths about it.
Thank you. Ajayla?
Everything Whitney said. this has been fantastic. I love the work that Cutting the Curd does. And I'm just excited that we're able to showcase the CCC, and on Instagram we are Cheese Culture Coalition, and we are that also on Facebook, so check us out.
Thank you. And Kira?
Definitely. Thank you to Cutting the Curd for having us. I feel like, you know, Carlos, thank you specifically for doing the work to find those curated questions for each of us to really get to the really important questions so that this podcast can be well done. Going back to what this industry needs, this is exactly what we're talking about. So sort of taking this and asking us back again. So looking forward to that. And thank you again to all the technical background people as well.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much for this conversation. As Ayela said, they are on Instagram and Facebook. There will be links on our episode show notes. And I thank the sound editors at Heritage Radio Network. And I also encourage you to follow the Heritage Radio Network for other content like this. Join us next week for more Cutting the Curd. This was Carlos Yescas. Bye.
Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.